okay, let's say after 5 years of watching football and being buddies and talking, you're convinced that the resurrection hypothesis is the best hypothesis, but as you said earlier, it's just as ludicrous as everything else because it involves the resurrection. Now, so let's say we have a resurrection hypothesis. What happens if you're open to the afterlife? Wouldn't you have to be more open now to the resurrection since your big objection
resurrection? How long was Jesus dead before he rose? Before he walked out?
By the clock,
yes.
The traditional answer
yes.
would be about a day and a half.
All right. So do you have any documentation at all that shows someone dead, clinically dead, we know they're dead for over a day and a half, and then they come back to life?
If I did, would it make a difference? Or not?
If I did, would it make
a difference?
Gary, let me tell you why. What it would actually make Jesus' resurrection still a natural event.
Okay, if that's true. Now, that's a good move. That's a good move on your part. By the way, I have 1 year death case at 18 hours and one at 12 hours.
Okay, wait, you said near death?
Yeah, these are near-death cases where people are pronounced dead in hospitals and spontaneously come to while their bodies are sitting in the morgue or ready to
cold and
where they're ready to be pushed down to the morgue. Yeah,
yeah, I could imagine that happening because sometimes the body probably could kickstart and do something crazy, and we can't really predict.
I know a case where a woman who had no brain and no heart on the operating table. They tried to revive her over a long period of time. They pronounced her dead. By the way, I talked to the medical doctor in this case,
mm-hmm.
and while the guys were pushing her to the hospital morgue, Twilight Zone-like, she sat up on the table with the sheet over her head. She sat up. They ran and got a doctor. He gave her an adrenaline shot, and then she started giving all kinds of evidential reports about the room she was in
while
she was dead.
Well, I was going to say that I know that my mother went under once. And I don't know. Do you have another 30 minutes, Gary, after this? Because we kind of went off the track, but I want to jump back and allow some callers.
Yeah, I'm glad to go with you back to the resurrection.
Okay.
I had to answer your question because I realize, back to our football example.
Yeah. Hold that thought. I just want to very quickly tell you how I know that. Remember, sometimes...
Your mother.
Our experiences, my mom once said that she could hear everybody. She said she could even see people in the room and all that stuff. But her memories were simply fragmented from all the medication and from everything else that was going on. But I told her, did you know that you could actually hear? I mean, you can construct.
Yes, you can.
You can construct images with just hearing.
That's correct. How close to dead was she?
Pretty close. They said if they didn't start working on her, she would have died that day. Within a few minutes, they said, actually. This is, she would die within a few minutes. So she has something wrong with her heart, something like that.
Is your mom a believer or a Christian believer or not?
Not now.
And she talked her out of it, right?
That's right. I sure did.
Is that true?
That is true. That's very true.
I was just kidding, but anyway.
It's very true. But And she realized that, you know what, after we talked about it, she said, you know what, I think I probably did construct, because I did see the room at first. Or at least, I mean, we all have seen hospital rooms on television. Or visited somebody, right. So we kind of have a good idea what it looks like. And then when you're going under, there's all kinds of stimulus that is occurring that you might not be consciously aware, but your subconscious, your dream state could reconstruct those things. There's a light overhead because you still have some stimulus from the light, et cetera. And that, me, by the way, case in point, anesthetic does not work very well on me. I am one of those cases, by the way, that I can hear everything and I can feel stuff when I'm under. I'm one of those.
The only thing I want to know is, can you feel the knife?
you feel a dull feeling, and it's not pleasant. But you can't jump off the table or anything like that. It's the weirdest thing. It is so strange. It is because you know you're being sliced into, but it's not a.
Right.
It's the weirdest fear ever. But anyway. But considering all those other factors, medications and all this various stuff,
right.
And then, of course, I'd be curious about what kind of brain damage these people experience as well. I mean,
that's the crazy thing. I mean, one of the cases I know of a little girl who drowned, she was 9 years old. It's a real case. She was underwater for 19 minutes.
Her body went into conservation mode.
Well, that's usually like in cold water. This is in a warm water. This is a swimming pool.
Mm-hmm.
This is a swimming pool. And she was brain dead. The doctor in attendance gave her a 1 in 10,000 chance of surviving with brain function. By the way, he was an agnostic. And he gave her one 10,000 chance of surviving.
Yeah, his experience, right.
I'm sorry?
Yeah, based on what he's experienced in the past, sure.
Right. And when she came to spontaneously, I say spontaneously, I mean she was in ICU and 3 days later she came to. And by spontaneously, I mean they didn't do anything extra to her. She just popped up one day like that woman on the cart going to the morgue.
And now now she's an idiot savant.
Pardon me?
Now she's an idiot savant.
Yeah. Well, she says to the doctor when he comes in the room, now she was brain dead when she came to the hospital. He was the doctor on duty, and she said to him when she woke up, this has been written up in a medical journal, by the way, her whole case, a whole article just on her case.
Well, you know, we will Google it, but okay, go ahead.
All right. And and he said to her, she said to him, hey, thanks for saving my life a couple of days ago. Appreciate that. Where's the tall doctor with the beard? There were two of them who worked on her, and he said, he's an agnostic, and he said, yeah, I'll go get him. And they got the doctor, brought him back. They sat there, and they said they took notes for 1 hour on what she had been telling them. And she said, the night I, quote-unquote, died, she said, that night, I was allowed, she said, an angel came. Now, there's an angel named Elizabeth. Now, there's no test for Elizabeth, so there's no checkpoint here with reality. But just a little girl's story. She said, an angel named Elizabeth. She's all tied down in ICU with all these machines on.
And they're busy opening up her eyes and looking into her pupils all the time. Who knows? Maybe quick little snapshot. It's hard to say.
Okay. I mean, even if you said that, I think they left her alone. But I mean, let's just grant that. She said this angel allowed me to look into my home to see what my parents were doing. And she said, now this is as soon as she comes to.
Sure.
She told what her brother was doing, what her sister was doing, where her dad was. She said, my mom, they left the hospital, as I recall the story.
Oh, so she's flying around now. Interesting.
Pardon me?
So she's flying around, essentially.
Well, I don't know if she's flying around or if she's able to see it from where she is. That's always been a question.
Remote viewing. Interesting.
Remote viewing. Anyway, so the doctor said, okay, so what was your dad doing? What was your brother doing? And then when she got to her mom, he said, what was your mom doing? And she said she was making dinner. And they said, all right, there's a point of reference to the real world. They said,
exactly. She always makes dinner.
What was she cooking? And she said, roast chicken and rice. So the guys wrote down, the two doctors wrote down roast chicken and rice. When the parents came in to see her, he points to the wife and he says, what did you make for dinner two nights ago?
How would
you
do that?
I had chicken and rice.
I don't understand. Why would they even do that? Why would they even? I mean, usually doctors would be so concerned about everything else. Why are they going to write down? I just don't. I mean, that's the weirdest thing.
Yeah, she came. Yeah, it's a good point. she came to when she was just conversing with him like every day.
Right, and for some reason they said, you know what? I think she probably really did see this. So let me write this down and then let their parents. You know, hey, did you guys really?
They're checking it out. But the guy, the head doctor, who was a pediatric brain specialist. He was the agnostic. I don't know what the other guy was, but I talked to this guy for hours, and he was an agnostic. Anyway, he now is some sort of theist who believes in an afterlife. Now, beyond that, I don't know if he has any specific beliefs, but he studied about 20 of these evidential things, and he's now, changed his mind.
All right, I'd love to know his name.
But, you tell his name. But back to the football thing, we're sitting there, and if you're, I think almost everybody's big objection to resurrection is afterlife. It's like you said, dead men don't do anything. Well, if I said to you, well, here's a bunch of dead men that seem to be doing something, you couldn't quite as easily say, well, resurrection is the best thesis.
If true, I mean,
but it's so far-fetched, or whatever your word was you used earlier, fantastic or whatever, I'd say, well, it's not so fantastic if other people have seen little things, and then you'd go. By the way, your point was really, really good. You'd go, well, then you know what? The resurrection of Jesus is looking to me not to be very supernatural.
Right.
And I would say, well, Reg, we're going to have to sit there. We're going to have to talk about whether pardon me?
Yep, I already know where this is going, but yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we're not talking about the bag lady on the street. We're talking about Jesus.
Mm-hmm.
And how many other people do you know who were raised after a day and a half? And here's one for you. Near-death experiences, the little girl's body, when she came to, where's her body? Well, she's talking to the doctors. Where's Jesus' body? Well, the tomb's empty.
Mm-hmm.
So whatever happened to him happened to his body. Then Paul sees him later in an account that critics love. Talk about that if you want. But the account that critics love is the Acts account where Paul says he was blinded by Jesus' light. Well, that's not your normal body either. So I would, if you said to me, all right, I'm open to afterlife. This is, you know, we're talking for years now, watching a lot of football, and you go, all right, look, I'm open to afterlife, I'm open to resurrection, but now you just got me thinking it's a natural event. Well, then I give you a bunch of reasons why this can't be natural. The little girl can be, but the Jesus case can't be.
And I guess that would be the rub is like, you know, why would something just not be an inexplicable natural occurrence? Because, I mean, people back in a long time ago believed that any single event that affected man that was unexpected or disastrous or even helpful, they thought that the gods were responsible for it. They thought that it was something spiritual. Sure. But as we gain more knowledge about the human condition, about nature, about environment, we now knew the root causes. So isn't it just as plausible that we simply do not understand what these because we have a historical precedence. You see what I'm saying?
So, in other words, now you're moved from atheism to agnosticism.
No, not at all. I was saying.
No, I mean about the resurrection. You'd say, now I just don't know what happened.
I don't know. I understood. Not theological agnosticism, but you mean just not knowing about this particular.
Yeah, like if someone really pushed and you're going, that can't happen because there's no God.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah, right, because there are tons of things we don't know yet, and we're still trying to figure out how these things work. So if all these instances you mentioned were true, there's no doubt that eventually, inevitably, because historically we have this being the case, that we will, with enough research, find out exactly what's going on. But again, Gary, historically, though, this has not been going into the in favor of supernaturalism. This has always been in favor of a naturalistic explanation, though. Historically, this has always been the case.
Always.
Can you think of any case in which supernaturalism has trumped the natural?
Yes.
Besides Jesus.
What do you do with the? I'd want to talk about 100 near death experiences.
Those experiences just now though. I just said first of all, I don't even know if those experiences are true. So I guess it's hard for us to relate to what we know.
So what I'm saying is there are sure some phenomena I can put on the table. I just finished a book. It hasn't come out yet. I have some cases of spontaneous. I know this sounds like Twilight Zone, but I'll tell you what. I won't give you the cases because I want to get people.
Yeah, because that's one of my criticisms. If you're going to say spontaneous regeneration of anything.
No.
Okay,
no,
that's it.
But I would say spontaneous remissions of cancer.
Oh, that happens all the time.
What I mean is where it's gone in 24 hours. I don't mean it's gone in 3 weeks. I mean it's gone in 24 or 48 hours. When someone is prayed for.
Oh. I've got some
cases, and the medical guys will back it up.
Okay. You're right. We're definitely going totally off track now.
So all I'm saying is this: when you make your comment that everything in the world that can be investigated, naturalism always wins, I go.
You're talking about modern instances now in which we are still ignorant. I'm talking about things in the past consistently. Over time, as we research more and learn more, Gary, we have found out what were the catalysts involved in many, many different things, and we continue to keep moving in that direction progressively. It's not receding. It's not getting worse. It's not like scientists are throwing their hands up saying, we just can't ever figure this out.
Yeah.
But if you're going to say,
well, what about Dante's Hell or something in the Middle Ages? Here's the classic case. The eclipse is now explained according to astronomy. But let's just say, for the sake of the argument, that there are the same sort of near-death, healing, whatever, 1,000 years ago. How do you know that you're just not assuming that science has answered those questions instead of what's maybe, I mean, you have to be open, maybe science did not solve that particular case?
Okay, well, granted, for the sake of argument, that could be the case, but so far that hasn't been proven in any way. So far, even believers accept certain scientific advances. They don't sit around and go, well, I don't know. Did God make that concoction, or did you do that, or where did that come from?
I hear you.
We assume that the science is true because it works. And a lot of the times.
Let's put it this way. If there are anomalies today that look like quasi, quote-unquote, miracles, we can hedge the words however we want.
Yes.
If there are phenomena today that are candidates for supernatural events, all I'm saying is I'll bet you there were events that were candidates for miracles back in the Middle Ages, too. In other words, I don't think science has explained everything down through the ages. I don't think today's science would explain everything that happened in the 14th century.
No, I want to make sure that, yeah, I didn't mean for it to come across like that. I wasn't saying we've explained every single thing up to this point.
Or that we could.
Obviously, or, we don't have the tools currently, no. I said, but I'm saying historically, though, that in many, I guess I did say every, but I guess I mean in many of the cases in which there was allegedly a supernatural cause for something, we learned that there was something else going on with that. And we continue to do that, and that is the progression.
Except for these hundreds of cases which we have question marks by because we weren't able to do that for them.
Well, and some did have question marks, and then we figured those out. I'm pretty sure.
But no, I mean that. For example, there is I would just go back to NDEs. There was a young lady, like
waking dreams, for instance. We figured that out. We did not understand hypnopompic and hypnagogic dream states for a very long time,
sure.
Gary. But
sure.
now that science has come along and we can induce these, we've seen we can look at the brain and we see how these things are occurring. We no longer need a supernatural explanation to say that my soul has somehow jumped out of my body and this is occurring, or I saw my grandmother touch me. We now know that waking dream states can induce these exact same experiences.
Sure. Sure.
So that's another example for me. So that's a score one again for naturalism.
Well, on the dream thing, yeah. But Reggie, I don't want to be the one to have gotten us off the subject. So let me just say, it wasn't you. I'm not blaming it on you. I'm just saying the reason I went over there was because you were saying to me, well, if the resurrection is the best explanation, you still have one crazy thing doing a better job than other crazy things. That kind of comment you made, and I'm saying, well, what if it's about a realm that's not so crazy? What if you have other reasons? If the only thing against the resurrection is we've never seen these kind of things before, if that's the only thing still lurking, and all the facts look good.
No. What I mean about that is that there is a rational reason to doubt it. I do not need to accept it.
But your rational reason is what? Naturalism is true?
My rational reason to doubt it is because of our experience historically, that whenever we've seen these supernatural...
The minute you say experience historically, I'm saying that's what's weak.
Why do you think that's weak when that's one of the bases of developing new science and
sure
evolving is through this method?
Sure it is, but science can only talk about things it can measure and so on and so on and so on. There are many, many things science can't measure.
Right.
For example, this is a stupid example, but I mean... Science can't tell me I'm in love with my wife. There are things in the world that science can't measure. Now, you can maybe tell me what an emotional state looks like.
Of course.
But what I'm saying is, I don't want to keep going back and back and back, but I'm just saying, if I have different kinds of experiences, there are experiments with answered prayer, there's healing, there's NDEs, and then if I wanted to talk about God, which hasn't even come up, but I mean, then I'd say, now, Reggie, with all of those kind of things, you should at least not rule resurrection out without looking at the...
I'll look at it. Yeah, sure.
Well, obviously, because you have me on the program.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll let you go back to the resurrection data. I'm just trying to answer that question, which says this is really, really interesting,
I understand exactly what you're saying. You know, if you, and I see why it's continuing this way, because if you can find an adequate wedge for me to, if I can open up that door a little bit and allow you, allow me to admit that these incidences do occur, then obviously it's an easy leap and jump to the quote, as you would probably say, a fact that Jesus resurrected.
Yeah, but let's put it this way.
It's an easy jump to there.
I know Anthony Flew's a bad name in some of your circles, but back in the days when he was... when he and I debated for the first time back in 1985, he was much, much younger, and he said he didn't believe in God or anything. But he's got a famous comment. It's in print. Our book was published. He said, totally different subject, but a relevant point. He said, if there is good evidence for God, just the point you just made, he said, if there's good evidence for God, then I don't need very much evidence at all to go from there to resurrection because the door's already been opened. I'm just suggesting there's a bunch of doors that a naturalist would have to shut completely. God, prayer, healing,
or death experience.
Or
it could be that the believer in those things has opened up far too many doors unnecessarily.
It could be, but these are relevant things that have to be put on the table, and I'm suggesting that a person shouldn't say, well, you've got some good interesting facts for the resurrection, but you have to understand I'm not open to that phenomena because nothing happens after death. I'm saying, well, here's some other stories that should make you open to that. Then I go back to the resurrection.
Right.
I'm just showing you how I was moved
understood.
By we're in a
understood.
Dialogue.
I mean, and I wish you had, you know, the names of all the documents and stuff like that, but...
I do. In fact, most of them are in my publications.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I have a publication. I have a... In fact,
but
I read...
I'm trying to, by the way, Gary, I hate to do this. I really do, but folks have been dying to call in and talk to you. And I know you're
not
really...
surprised. It's already 9:15, so...
Right, and I know you're not finished, really, but... but I think many of us kind of get the crux of that.
All right,
and
so, I'll stop right there.
And so I think I'll leave some
by the way, you've been very, very kind and very understanding. I appreciate the two-way chatter and just not feeling that someone's not saying to me, no way.
Right,
you're not like
right.
that at all. You're open-minded. I really, really
no
appreciate
problem.
That.
So I'd like to, if I may,
sure.
kind of surmise that what you are pretty much doing is just analyzing, you said this earlier, analyzing the probability that could be the case.
That the world's bigger than we think.
And if that is the case, then just as we accept many other things based on probability, then why not go ahead and accept that?
That's a good point. Based on this data that I outlined earlier.
And now that's a historical precedent for you.
That's correct. Pardon me? That's our historical what?
Precedent. Now, that's what we do historically. You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. We use percentages
all the
time.
And I would go back to the facts and I'd say, and you could say, or one of your callers could say to me, great, open-minded, great. I'll give you open-minded all day long. Let's talk about resurrection. And that's where I go back to those 12 facts.
All right. So here we go. 888-503-0802. You're listening to the Infidel Guys Show. We have... Somebody's closing the door right now. Somebody just called in. But we're talking about the resurrection of Jesus Christ and other things. As I have somebody on the line right now. Hello, you are on the air.
Hey, how's it going, Reg? This is Ash, the Inquirer.
Damn, that's loud. Hold on. There we go. Okay.
I know where this is going because, I mean, I studied and was a former evangelical, so I can kind of feel for it. But really, all the evidence that's been presented so far, at best, kind of shows that this is something that might have happened.
Of course.
And that there's a wealth of other things that could just as well have happened as well. But, you know, what we have is a statement from Paul saying that amongst that if this didn't happen, they're amongst all men that's most pitiable. Maybe this is more of a theological question. Why did an omnipotent, omniscient, omnipresent creator choose some of the most questionable lines of evidence to prove one of the most important events, not one of the most important, if you go with what Christian's saying, in human history? Why, you know, we've got at best... granting every argument, a group of about, you know, at best 12 people saying that this occurred, just by and large, all of whom are believers. You know, and we only have Paul's word that he wasn't.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah, and I missed your name. Your name is what?
Ash.
Ash, okay. That's when the phone was jumping there. Well, first of all, as I pointed out earlier, good question, by the way. Two of the people on my list, James and Paul, were not believers before they saw Jesus. And Paul does tell us that he was not a believer.
James was it?
James, the brother of Jesus, that's correct. And Paul tells us...
Wait a minute. What's your proof of that?
Of which one? James? You said Paul...
Yes.
You said Paul doesn't say that. In Galatians chapter 1 and in Philippians chapter 3, two books that nobody disputes are Pauline, so critics would let me talk about Galatians and Philippians all day long. In Galatians 1 and Philippians 3, Paul says, I was persecuting the church, trying to imprison or kill people who named the name of Jesus, and Jesus stopped me in my tracks, especially, he says this in Galatians 1.
So we have to take his word for it. Kind of like when Muhammad said that the angel Gabriel visited him, we have to take his word for it too.
Yeah, well, except the difference is ask somebody for evidence for their claims. And when you say, well, what's the evidence that Paul saw Jesus? Now we're going back to the historical facts. But I was only addressing your question when you said Paul doesn't say he was an unbeliever. He does. Now, that doesn't mean it's absolutely 100% true, but he does say that.